Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. I'm your host, Thomas. Thank you for choosing to listen tonight. The way this podcast works couldn't be more simple. Just pick an episode, press play, and get comfortable in bed. We'll take a moment to relax, and then I or one of my friends will read you a bedtime story that's designed to gently grasp your attention and guide you to sleep. And remember, the more you tune in, the more effective the podcast will be at putting you to sleep. So be sure to subscribe so you never miss a good night's rest. And if you're listening on Spotify, then hit the follow button so you stay updated every time we release a new episode. If you wake up feeling refreshed and happy tomorrow, then please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I read every single one and appreciate all of the feedback. You can also contact me and the team directly at getsleepy.com. where you can let us know what you think about the podcast and share any ideas you have for future episodes. And tonight, our big thank yous are sent with the warmest regards from me and the team. And they go out to Sarah, Heath, Ariana, Nicole, and Blaine. I can honestly say that even on a mundane or even a bleak kind of day, seeing your emails come through really lifts my spirits and brings me a lot of joy. And if anyone ever asks me to restore their faith in humanity, all I need to do is show them your messages. Now, I hope you're well and feeling positive as you listen tonight. It's great to hear that Get Sleepy is becoming a staple part of so many bedtime routines all over the world. And if, like me, you've had a particularly busy day today, then I'm sure tonight's story from TK Kelman is going to soothe your soul and take you to a peaceful place that's just right for falling asleep. Our story's set just outside of a cozy Alaskan town, where we stumble upon an old gold mine. So settle yourself into bed. Get nice and comfortable in whatever position feels best for you. Allow your rhythm of breath to just gradually slow down. And each time you exhale, let the tension in your muscles ease away that little bit more. Relax your jaw. Relax the muscles around your eyes and your cheeks. Then do the same with the rest of your body. Starting with your shoulders, your arms, your chest, and your abdomen. As you breathe out, release those muscles and let the tension melt away. Now moving to your lower back, hips, upper legs, your calf muscles, and down into your feet. As you just melt away the tension, using the simplicity of your breath. Your face, your body, and your mind can gently rest as you drift off to sleep. Meanwhile, our story begins in a quaint town deep in the heart of Alaska, The shops lining the picturesque main street have a small town beauty and a touch of ruggedness from enduring the cold Alaskan winters. But right now, it's a clear and cool spring morning. The golden sun warms your face as birds chirp in a park across the street.
Imagine a small town with clusters of houses and shops tucked away among vast, sprawling fields of green. To your right, you see a tall water tower that stands out on the horizon. You look around. Surrounding the town, reaching from ground to sky, are great and wild mountains, their gray peaks hidden behind shifting clouds. Every so often, the tip of a mountain peak will appear as the last wisp of a cloud moves on, only to be covered once again as the next cloud takes its place. It's easy to become entranced by the light as it moves across the face of these green and gray mountains. As you watch, the sunlight hits the foliage just right, and the greens become brighter, almost shiny, with touches of gold. Then, the greens go dark, almost blue, as the shadow of the gray clouds moves across them. Light and dark. Light and dark. You watch this cycle happen over and over, each time slightly different than the last. In the distance, you can just barely make out the faint gray line of a road snaking its way up and down the ridges of the mountain. You follow its twists and turns until you lose sight of its path about halfway up. What's up there, you wonder? Where does that road go? Could it possibly go all the way to the top? There's so much mystery in a path like that, so much to explore. To your left, there's an older woman walking to her truck with a small bag of books. She typifies what you'd expect someone living here would be like. Kind, but strong and capable. She pauses when she sees you standing there, staring off into the distance. Beautiful, isn't it? She says. I bet you're wondering where that road goes. You nod. If you'd like to see it, I can take you there, she says. You follow her to her pickup truck. She puts the books in the back, and you climb into the passenger seat. The truck is red, with a park ranger insignia on the side and new upholstery on the seats. Its classic look reminds you of a truck you'd seen in a film. It's familiar and safe. She puts the key in the ignition, starts up the engine, and you rumble out onto the road. As you drive, you watch the shops go by through the truck window. There's a small cafe with people sitting at little round tables outside. One of them laughs and then takes a sip out of her coffee cup. Next door is a bookshop. Perhaps this is where the woman got her stack of books. You wonder just how many books are inside that bookshop, stacked in piles, packed neatly into rows on wooden shelves. Hundreds? Thousands? Surely too many to count today. Down the road is a restaurant with a bright red roof. Through the window, you see small tables, each with four chairs. Everyone inside seems to be happy. You see a man eating a bowl of spaghetti. There's a woman sipping an iced tea, and her two children are sharing a sandwich. It looks like a lovely place for a meal. Perhaps you'll come back here later, after your adventure up the mountain. The woman drives you closer to the edge of town. You pass the water tower and the last row of houses. Before you is just the road and trees. Large pines line the roadside, their branches tightly packed next to one another. It's like a wall of trees, you think, standing at attention. Each tree is a deep, dark green, and its bark brown with a hint of gray. It's a rich color that stands in contrast to the bright red truck you're riding in. Further down the road you go. Here, a little way out of town, you pass one of the last places you can stop before reaching the mountain. It's a little gas station with a giant wooden sign boasting the best ice cream around. Cherry, root beer, cotton candy, mint chip, even banana pudding. There are dozens of flavors for you to try once you come back down this way. Past the ice cream shop and gas station, the trees return to guide you to the base of the mountain. For the first time, the woman puts on her turn signal. She makes a left onto the mountain road. From here, the only way to go is up. You follow the curve of the road, past another grove of trees. On the left, you see a mother moose and her two babies trying to walk on skinny legs that aren't quite coordinated yet. The mother moose coaxes them on into the trees. You and your driver chuckle, watching their gangly limbs and the way the mother walks so patiently behind them, ensuring they make it safely to the forest. The road curves left, then right, then left again. As you climb higher and higher, the mountain seems to come into its own. Ahead, you see a waterfall. The water cascades down a smooth rock face, pouring into a small pool at the base of the rock. The pool reflects the falling water and also the clouds, dancing patterns and colors across the spray. To your right, you notice a small river. It stems from a glacier above. The glacier melt makes the long journey from high up all the way down the mountain to the valley below and through the town where you started. The riverbanks are grassy and dotted with small blue flowers and larger pink ones. The blue flowers are forget-me-nots, the woman says. It's a good name. You're not likely to forget this place. The pink flowers are fireweed. Fireweed is a bit like the shape of a corn cob, with its tiny blossoms taking the place of kernels lined in neat rows from top to bottom. Fireweed blooms throughout the summer, its buds opening in stages as the season progresses. When the fireweed finishes blossoming, it turns red and then goes to seed. Little cotton-like bundles taking the place of the blossoms start the cycle anew. When that happens, the people who live here know summer is over and that it's time to start preparing for fall. The road continues up and up without even a momentary break. Up, up, and up you drive. The river guides you on your right, growing smaller and more wild as you get higher and higher. The river bank gets a bit rockier. The large trees get smaller and smaller until they're replaced altogether by bushes and shrubs. Up here, you notice there's nothing much taller than the red truck. You're above tree line now, just the grass and the flowers and the brambles dotting the landscape. You follow a sharp curve in the road and see an old abandoned roadhouse on the left. It's been a long time since it was open, serving meals and offering beds to travelers in need. You're awfully high now. How could there possibly be more road up here? But behind every curve lies another as you make your way up the mountain. Ahead, the scenery changes again. Steep, impenetrable rocky cliffs take the place of the tumbling tundra. The greens give way to grays as you reach the start of the mountain's peaks. Off in the distance, you see a few small buildings placed here and there on the last inch of green beneath the gray rocks. Their red trim stands out against the natural backdrop, just like the truck. Nearly there, the woman says. Nearly there. From here, the road is straighter as you enter the bowl, or what looks like a vast, wide amphitheater of peaks with a soft green meadow at the base. It's the bottom of the top of the mountain, the woman explains. And then, before you know it, you're here. The end of the road. The woman pulls into a small, round parking lot and comes to a stop. You thank her for the ride. No problem, she says. I love coming up here any chance I get. She promises to return and pick you up at the end of the day and points out a public telephone at the edge of the lot in case you need to call town for any reason. She waves to you as she pulls the truck around and drives out of the lot. Now, it's just you, those red-rimmed buildings you saw in the distance, and the mountain. You take a moment to listen. There's a slight breeze that rustles the leaves on the bushes. A quiet whistle comes across the open land. It must be a marmot calling to its fellow animals with its distinctive sound. Across the road, you hear the babbling of the river as it runs over rocks and around curves on its way down the mountain. You hear the faint creak of one of the building's wooden frames. Behind you, and beyond the red-trimmed buildings, you hear the powerful rush of water. Another stream, you wonder? You make your way past the first of the buildings, which appears to be a two-story bunkhouse. On your left, you pass a jungle of ruins that used to be a similar building, perhaps a little smaller. After passing a second bunkhouse, you see what's making the rushing sound. It is water, running beneath the ruins of the old Lode gold mine. So that's what's at the top of the mountain, a gold mine. Of course, you think. These mountain peaks used to be dotted with gold mines that sprung up after the original prospectors found flakes of gold in these very streams. Panning for gold may have been how it started, but this is what it became. This mine, and the others like it, practiced lode gold mining, taking ore straight from the source, from the depths of the thick granite mountains on which they were situated. Miners searched the granite for signs of gold veins and removed the rock in great jumbles. Those rock pieces made their way to the jaw crusher, which pummeled them into smaller chunks. Those moved on to a stamp mill to be crushed into even tinier pieces and dust. Those final pieces would go on to the amalgamation area, where they'd be washed over mercury-covered copper plates, which helped separate gold from the other materials. The gold would bind with the mercury while the rest washed off. From there, the workers would begin the retorting process, whereby the amalgam of gold and mercury would be heated until the mercury could be recovered and the gold would be left behind. Down in the assayer's office, the person in charge of evaluating the gold would take a close look at the specimen before it went off to sale. This was one of the biggest and most productive mines in Alaska during its heyday. Miners lived in a bunkhouse on the property or in a little village next to the mine. Unlike many other mines in the area, married workers here could bring their spouses and families up the mountain. There was even a small school for the miners' children. On the mine property, there was a commissary where workers could buy goods and even treats like ice cream and chocolates. There was a mess hall, which served up 3 meals a day. Miners ate from real china dishes, not the typical tin fare used in other mines. The manager here believed his workers should be able to take pride in their workplace, and part of that was treating each and every employee with dignity from the dinner table to the tunnel and everywhere else. You walk around the mine property, peeking in the windows of each of the buildings, doing your best to guess at which is which. There's an old mine cart here on the path in front of the commissary. What would it have been like to work here, you wonder? You look into the window of one of the bunkhouses. Inside, you see a communal area with pool tables and a dartboard. You check the handle on the door, and it opens with ease. Inside, the room has a cozy feel. You imagine miners taking a break in here or enjoying a rare day off. In front of you is a wooden stairwell. You walk up. On the second floor is a narrow hallway that stretches the length of the building. On either side of the hallway are rooms. In the first room, you see pencils and a notebook on a little table. In the second, you see an old guitar laying on the bed. The third has a pair of boots laid out as though their owner were going to work in the morning. The rooms are small but cozy and comfortable for a single person. You walk back downstairs and out the front door. Perhaps you'll just pop into one or two more spots before you head out. You follow the path down to the mess hall. Inside, you find an enormous kitchen where all the food for the hundreds of employees would have been made each day. There's a large butcher block in the center, and preparation tables on either side. There are sinks and a large stove for cooking. You walk through the kitchen and find yourself in the actual dining area. It's a large, open room. It has benches and tables laid out in perfect rows. places are set with china and silverware. You imagine the miners pouring in after a hard day's work to enjoy a hearty meal and light-hearted conversation. The thought of a long day causes you to yawn. It's been a long day for you, too. You head out of the mess hall and back onto the path. There's just one more spot you want to check. A small building that looks more like a house than any of the other structures here. It has two stories and is quaint and compact. You open the door and find yourself in a little apartment. This was where some of the managers used to live. The apartment is covered in lush carpeting. On the walls are family portraits of each of the inhabitants. Little girls and boys play in one snapshot. A family sits together in another. What a unique place for those children to grow up, you think? As that thought lingers in your mind, red rays of sun begin to shine through the window. The sun is getting low. It's time to go. You leave the house behind and make your way back down the path to the parking area. As promised, the woman and her bright red truck are waiting for you. You climb into the passenger seat and give her a smile, which turns into another yawn. What a wonderful adventure, you think. You saw so much and learned about the history of this special place at the top of a mountain. The car sways gently as it turns a corner, like a hammock cradling in the breeze. The woman smiles. Looking out the window, you feel your eyelids begin to grow heavy. You watch the bushes and the grass and the flowers go past. You see the plants get bigger. The bushes turn to trees. Those little blue flowers freckle the landscape. Forget-me-nots, you remember. That's also how you think of this day. It's not something you'll forget. Out the window, you see the river. Down on your left this time, following along with the curve of the road. Or, perhaps, does the road follow the river, you wonder? The landscape blurs. The weight of your eyelids is a lot right now. So you let them close. The gentle rocking of the truck relaxes your body as you drift calmly and serenely off to sleep.